Maui Nui is on a mission to help balance axis deer populations for the good of our environment, communities, and food systems on the island of Maui. They've shared over 126,000 pounds of nutrient-dense protein with the Maui community. Secure your spot now. Become a snack subscriber and join in helping to build more resilient food and ecosystems on Maui. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com. That's MauiNuiVenison.com. And use promo code BEAR for 20% off your first order.
Hey, everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at themeateater.com. Hope to see you at the show.
My name is Clay Newcomb, and this is a production of the Bear Grease Podcast called the Bear Grease Render, where we render down, dive deeper, and look behind the scenes of the actual Bear Grease Podcast. Presented by FHF Gear, American-made, purpose-built hunting and fishing gear that's designed to be as rugged as the places we explore.
I love it. If there's one thing I love about having a Bear Grease Podcast and such, is that you guys have no choice if you show up of what I get to say and do. And I am not a talented musician. Like, that is not a secret. But I love to play and sing. And so Misty says that the only reason I do this is because I make someone sit and listen to us play. So you've been trapped to hear us. But I do have something pretty cool. We're gonna play only two songs, and then we're gonna jump into the podcast. But the first song we're gonna play has never been played publicly before. It's a song that I wrote, and it's called "The Ballad of a Backwoodsman." Yeah. And yeah. And for those of you that follow along, you know that we have a Hall of Fame in the Bear Grease world. Y'all know the Bear Grease Hall of Fame? It's for real, man. It's not a joke. And the first inductee to the Bear Grease Hall of Fame was a man by the name of James Lawrence. I say is a man by the name of James Lawrence. James Lawrence lives in Mena, Arkansas. Dear, dear friend of mine. James Lawrence is an incredible mountain deer hunter. He's spent his whole life down in the Ouachitas and was killing deer when other people weren't killing deer, when there weren't deer. And James has always carried in my mind an intangible quality of the mountain people of Arkansas. Humble, earnest, hardworking, independent. And what I loved about James is nobody ever told him he was cool until maybe me and his wife. And James was gonna be here today because the song is about James Lawrence. He doesn't know there's been a song written about him. He's never heard it before. So he was going to be here today, but he was not able to come. And so we're going to introduce this song. Okay, that's stage one. Stage two of stuff I got to say is that you got to know a little bit about what this song is about, because it's quite specific. There's several reference points that are going to help you understand it. First of all, there's a reference to the Cossatot River. Y'all know where the Cossatot River is? Swimby Wood down in southwest Arkansas. Okay, James Lawrence was born at the headwaters of the Cossatot River. There is, you will hear the term shock pouching in this song. Y'all know what a shock pouch is? Okay, that's an old mountain way that James Lawrence's grandmother taught him how to do, to carry a deer out of the woods on your back by cutting different parts of his legs off and tying the deer's legs in knots and using it like a backpack strap. James Lawrence hunted deep, he still does, hunts deep in the mountains and shock pouch many deer. You're gonna hear that phrase. You're gonna hear reference to the sawdust pile. James hunted a particular area and they always camped at what they called the sawdust pile, which was deep in the mountains. You couldn't drive there, you had to walk there. And it was the remnants of an old sawmill where the sawdust stayed there for like 75 years. I mean, they pulled the logging equipment out of there forever, and there's still remnants of that sawdust pile. So they camped at the sawdust pile, okay? It's a complex song, okay? We're complex people, right? So, and then there's reference to bucking horses and motorcycle wrecks. When you talk to James, he's 75, and he's doing great for 75, but he's pretty banged up. And he always says, man, it was those bucking horses and motorcycle wrecks that did me in. So that's in the song. So I hope you enjoy it. We're going to give it a go.
No, sir.
Welcome to the live Bear Grease Render podcast. Yeah. Thank you guys so much for coming. It means a lot to me and Misty, and I know all the Bear Grease people, for everybody to come out. I know a lot of people traveled a long ways to get here, all the way across the country. Have we done the whole, like, who traveled the furthest thing yet? Has that happened
We did
yet?
A little bit of that earlier this morning.
Okay.
Yeah. So we got tickets from North Dakota.
South Carolina,
Manitoba, Texas, down Nebraska, in the tip of Florida, out west, Montana.
Yeah.
Young lady from Minnesota.
Yep, Minnesota's here.
Yeah, so I it means a lot to me that everybody would drive that far to come to a Black Bear event in Arkansas. So that's awesome. And I don't do this kind of stuff very often. I feel like my community has supported us, you guys, and wider people, not from Arkansas, but really Northwest Arkansas has been really good to me. And so I wanted to do an event where, you know, we just came together and had a good time. And so I'm thrilled that everybody's here. And everybody knows who's here. This is Brent Reeves. Brent's from down in the swamps. Brent does not like being called a hillbilly.
No.
I mean, he's like, well, I'm not a hillbilly. I literally live in, like, flat ground. So, and on the next Bear Grease podcast, you're going to learn why he doesn't want to be called a hillbilly. Like, the deep anthropological science of why, being from the flatlands delta of Arkansas, he is opposed to being called that. You're going to learn something about yourself.
Here, I'm fitting to teach you something. The superficial reason is because if a cat had kittens in the oven, you wouldn't call them biscuits.
One time I called Brent a hillbilly, and he said, "Don't call me a hillbilly. We had hillbillies mowing our grass." This is my wife, Misty Newcomb.
Proud
Y'all know
hillbilly.
Misty? Yeah. Man, I think it's pretty cool that I can have my wife with me on my podcast. Misty, do you know anybody else that puts their wife on their podcast? I use this to my advantage.
It's not like I'm asking to be on the podcast.
Yeah, she didn't want to be. But no, it's so great to have Misty. And then everybody has met Myron Means. He's been up here earlier. Myron and I have been, really, we've known each other for a lot of years now. And I mean, when you first got the job as the bear coordinator, which you were the bear coordinator of the state, correct?
Yes.
That changed, but yes. I think I talked to you within a month of you having that job.
About 15 years.
Yeah, probably so.
Too long.
too long. Yeah. But no, it's great to have Myron here, for real. James Brandenburg. James is he's a big wig here in Arkansas for Arkansas BHA. James would and his team are responsible for this. I don't really have anything to do with this other than just show up. And so James is one doing all the work and his team of guys.
Thank you.
So,
thank you.
Great event.
It's the guys. It's the everybody else is doing all the work.
And Josh Landbridge,
and
filmmaker.
It's like, what's he doing up there?
Yeah. Josh has been one of my best friends for a long, long time. And
23 years.
His mustache inspired me in 2006 to learn about the Bering Land Bridge. So that's a different story. But no.
You're welcome, you know, America.
Yeah. I think we live in an incredible state. Did you guys hear the podcast that just came out about the Bear State?
Woo!
And the Arkansas, the Big Bear of Arkansas, that story? Man, what's so wild about this place that we live, not this place being Arkansas, but this world that we live in, is that humans are only here for just like a really short period of time. So we typically gather information that seems pertinent to our best interests in the moment. And we can lose the bigger picture of why stuff is the way that it is. And
life is so complex. Stories are so complex. And I love it when you can, almost any single thing that you wanted to mine down into, like, why is Arkansas, why were we called the Bear State? Why did we move away from that? Man, there's like deep stories inside of it. Deep, deep stories. And it's so interesting because we now get to script who we are, what our identity is. And we look back at history and see how things happened. It's like you can begin to say, okay, we are active partakers in something that's happening right now that we get to build on purpose. And I don't know why, and I think everybody up here would agree, and Myron, for sure, someone who's dedicated a big part of his life to bears. From the first time that I killed a bear in Arkansas in 2001, it was the first year that it was legal to bait in Arkansas. And I've said it before, I think I said it last year, I claim to have killed the first legal bear in the state of Arkansas over bait. Because October 1st, 2001, at the crack of dawn, me and Gary Newcomb were, where's Dad at? Is he over there? Where's Dad at? He's somewhere. Me and my dad were hunting and killed a bear. I mean, I'm serious. Like, it was hardly daylight and killed a bear.
Hardly daylight?
It was bear. Right, it was legal.
It was right after daylight.
It was legal, Myron. Statutes of limitations.
That's right.
And it was perfectly legal. And at that time, I was 21 years old, and I had hunted a fair bit. I mean, I'd killed deer and turkeys and had been involved in hunting my whole life. And when I walked up to this bear that I had just killed, I realized that I knew nothing about it, like nothing. I didn't know what it ate. I didn't know where it wanted to bed. I didn't know when it denned. I didn't know about its reproduction cycle. And it felt hollow. At 21 years old, I was like, man, this is a great beast, and I know nothing about it. And something was happening inside of me that I couldn't have calculated. I wouldn't have. It was just unconscious, but really what was being said and demonstrated is that the hunt and partaking inside of taking wildlife is so much bigger than just taking an animal. There is a powerful component of connection that we have with hunting. And from that point, I was going to the U of A at that time. I was living in Fayetteville. And I started going to the University of Arkansas Library and found these old dusty books of all the research that had been done in Arkansas at that time by Clark and who else was it?
Kimberly Smith, Joe Clark, Dan Clapp, Stephen Hayes. They kind of did all the, you know, a lot of the research we based our management on for 30 years.
Yeah.
They did that work back in the mid to late 80s.
Right. And so I started reading that stuff, and that was the first time that I read that Arkansas was formerly known as the Bear State. Mm-hmm. And to be honest with you, there's been a couple of times in my life when I was upset at all the people around me because they didn't teach me something. And that was a moment when I was like, why didn't they tell me? Why didn't they tell me that this was the Bear State? And I was just fascinated by that and began to just study about bears and continue to hunt bears. I'll tell you another thing. When I first started getting, do y'all mind if I just have my own little podcast?
Yeah. We got a nice monologue.
You guys keep it down.
Y'all be quiet. Clay's got some stuff. I can hear y'all breathing. Yep. No, when I first started getting interested in bears and media as well, I had some pretty legitimate people who had my best interest in mind advise me not to get into bears. Like, there's a lot of different things I could have done. I started with in the whitetail world, writing articles for North American Whitetail and different things, and that's what me and Dad did. That's what my dad mainly, we did growing up. We whitetail bow hunted public land in Arkansas. It's just what we did. And then 21 killed a bear. And then, you know, a lot of stuff was going on, but I started tiptoeing into outdoor media and started just, like, leaning into this bear stuff. And I remember one guy, a good friend of mine, he was like, what are you doing, man? Why are you focusing on bears? He's like, you got to focus on deer.
Yeah, bears ain't cool.
It's exactly what he said. And I just said, I don't know, man. I just like them. And I kept going that direction. And it ended up being the best thing that I ever did for a lot of different reasons. But I felt like, and I wasn't the only one doing this, but I mean, I can just talk from what I experienced. I felt like I started to mine into stuff that people hadn't talked about or thought about or brought to the surface in a long time. Because bear hunting was pretty much stamped out of our culture for about 80 years, almost entirely. When you go to the Appalachian Mountains, you go to East Tennessee and North Carolina, they never lost their bears. And they maintained a bear hunting culture all through that time. Arkansas, our bears were extirpated, like Myron told us about earlier, in the early, by the turn of the 20th century, 1900, pretty well, 1940, pretty much our bears were gone. People forgot about bears. They did. They forgot how to use them. They forgot about bear grease. They forgot that bear meat was an incredibly good tasting meat. They forgot how to hunt bears. Literally, dads didn't teach their sons how to hunt bears because there weren't bears here. And then in 1980 was our first bear hunt.
First modern day, yeah.
Our first modern day bear hunt was in 1980. And the bear population just continued to climb, continued to climb, continued to climb, continued to climb. And then 2001 is when the Game and Fish made the decision, the management decision, that we were going to manage our bears using bow hunters on private land over bait, which is genius. Never, if you're from Arkansas and you've ever looked me in the eye, never, ever talk bad about baiting a bear. It is God's gift to us to be able to bait a bear. Because I can tell you something, they're hard to find out in the mountains by themselves. When I bait bears for a month in Arkansas, I call it my month with the bears. Because you see stuff that you never see any other time of year. And it's a fantastic management tool that allows us to be selective. Allows us to shoot older age males, all kind of stuff. Are y'all liking my monologue?
Yeah, it's
yeah,
great.
It's
y'all
just, great, man.
Y'all just keep being quiet, guys.
Preach.
Hey, y'all, this is what nighttime stay at the tuned. Newcombs looks
they'll
like.
They'll be taking up an offering later.
I love it when I get people cornered.
Yep.
Well, we may play some more music.
Nighttime at the Newcombs.
No. I'm trying to set the context for opening this up for Myra. No, because it's bigger. It's bigger than just, we can hunt bears. No, and there is no doubt, a trend in our society today, and it's not ever going to come to Arkansas. Never, never is it going to come to Arkansas, because we're not going to let it, right? Where right. People would say, you shouldn't be hunting predators. You shouldn't be using bait. You shouldn't be, telling, like someone who doesn't know, telling us what we should do. And it's a fantastic and incredible opportunity that we have, but when they opened up bear season, it opened up the floodgates for Arkansas bear hunters to be able to partake of something that had been culturally forgotten for generations, for real. And now we're 23 years into having a bear baiting season, and we're now like 50 years into having a bear season, 53 years into 1980, 43. To have a bear season. And I mean, there's a revival of the bear state. That's what I want to proclaim to the world. And it's not just in Arkansas, man. Whatever is happening ecologically in North America, whatever it is, there are drastic weather pattern changes that have been going on for the last 15, 20 years. A lot of wild stuff is happening. For whatever reason, it has been highly beneficial to the generalist omnivores, and specifically the black bear. You will not hear about a population of bears anywhere in the country that isn't expanding. And that's massive inside of a country with as much urban sprawl, habitat loss, civilization spread, all kind of habitat fragmentation. For us to be able to stand up and say, man, the icon of North American wilderness, the black bear, is coming back. You know, and it's coming back all over the country. You know, our game and fish brought in these bears in the 1950s and 60s, 254 bears, and transplanted them here in Arkansas, three different places. And now we got a hunting season in Oklahoma. There's a hunting season in Missouri. There are bears in northern Louisiana. There are bears in East Texas. There are bears on the other side of the Mississippi River in Mississippi. Not a lot, but they're there.
That's right.
And you look at this one little place, this one little dot on the map, and it's and that range is growing like this. And while I have you, this is so important from a social perspective because bear numbers are increasing all over the country. People that didn't know we had bears have them in their backyard. Urban people, maybe people who don't have a connection to rural America and hunting. They don't understand how someone would want to kill an animal. And with the increase of bears across the country, there's never been a more opportune time for the bear hunters of America to become educated, to become passionate, to know how to utilize the resource at the highest level when it comes to utilization of the commodities that a bear gives us. There's never been a better time for us to learn how to talk about predator hunting in a way that dominates. Somebody wants to talk to me about bear hunting and have and challenge me, and I'd be nice to them probably.
Would you let them talk?
I wouldn't.
I've got one self-help item for you.
Yes.
You need to work on the passion part of it.
Yeah.
Right?
I need to pop it down a little.
Most passionate man I know about bear hunting.
Well, what I'm saying is that this is not an argument of right and wrong, and we're trying to decide. We're right, and but we're not in a battle against people. We're in a battle against ignorance at the very definition of the word ignorance. Not a derogatory thing, but that's what we can do is educate people and learn how to us really value, respect, and love the bear. Like in that Big Bear of Arkansas story, this short story written in 1841, he said the fictitious character, Jim Doggett, okay? If you listened, you'll know. If you didn't, you should have. You should have known coming here. You should have listened to the last Bear Grease podcast. This fictitious character, he's an Arkansas bear hunter. And he says he sees a bear being bayed by hounds walking across a hill. And he said, oh, wasn't he a beauty? I loved him like a brother. And, man, that's the North American hunter. What we do inside of the North American model of wildlife conservation is a functionalization of a love for wildlife and a love for wild places.
Yep.
I mean, that's what it is. And we have a track record in this country of where we messed up pretty bad for a while. Like the market hunting era and just rampant exploitation of wildlife. Like, yep, that did happen. And we knew and we saw we messed up. But then we rebounded and have escorted onto planet Earth the most robust endeavor for wildlife husbandry ever in the history of the planet. For real. What's happened in North America, not just with bears, but with deer, the wild turkey, the elk, the sheep, everything. It's incredible. And man, we can't lose that inside of our culture. Like the very definition of being an American should have. Not everybody needs to be a hunter. Not everybody needs to be. But the very definition of American, at one time, there was a sector of that was that had hunting as a primary component of American identity. And we can't lose that. And the way we don't lose it is we do stuff like this. and you take time out of your life to come and support something and join organizations and hunt, buy a hunting license, be an active participant inside of what we're needing from the broader sportsmen. Like the Game of Fish did a big survey this year, bear hunter survey.
That's right.
And I mean, you guys learned a lot. Tell me about that survey.
I did learn a lot. You know, a lot of the survey went out to people that have successfully harvested a bear in the last 3 years. And they got a pretty good response rate. I believe it was something like 48%.
Wow.
Of the people that they sent it out to returned a response on it. And it was a lot of, it wasn't necessarily geared toward, well, do you hunt bear, what zone you hunt in? It was more geared toward people's associations with bear hunting. How long have you bear hunted? You know, have you bear hunted 0 to 2 years or 15 years? Or, you know, how did you learn to bear hunt? Like Dr. Ballard was saying, you know, did you learn it through podcasts? Did you learn it through agency employees? Did you learn it through newspaper articles or magazine articles? So a lot of it was geared toward trying to quantify or put on paper what the attitudes are towards bear hunting across the state. And, you know, social science isn't just new to game and fish. It's new to a lot of natural resource agencies around. But it's becoming an ever more important part of our management goals or strategies, is to incorporate social science attitudes of the public into that. You know, we had a targeted audience, successful bear hunters. You know, hopefully in the future we could expand that to what I would like to see is if and when we ever have a license system in place where I'm able to determine how many bear hunters we have in the state, I'd like to send that survey out to, you know, not successful and unsuccessful bear hunters.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of it's geared aimed at determining attitudes more than it is like someone's success rate and things like that.
Is there anything you can point to that you learned from that?
Oh yeah, there's a lot of stuff I learned. There's a lot bigger culture out there about utilization of bear parts other than meat. Mm-hmm. And you know, I kind of suspected it, but you don't know if you hear about people rendering down fat or, you know, doing things, making soap. Like one of the gentlemen here gave me some soap. You hear about people doing that, but you think, well, you don't know if, you know, those are outliers in the general consensus of how people utilize bears. Why they want to hunt bears? Do they want to hunt it for all things included or just the meat or just the trophy? But actually like 65% or more of the people that responded and utilize several parts of the bear, not just the meat.
Yeah.
And so that's really good to know. It helps me as a manager understand, you know, how people want to utilize bears, which is important. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just all about people harvesting bears. As I said, there's a lot of...
Let me say something about that.
Yes.
Oftentimes, in talking to people just about hunting in general, you'll talk to somebody and say, yeah, I bear hunt. And they'll go, I don't know if I'd want to kill a bear. I don't know if I'd want to eat it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And there are parts of the country that have... that for years managed bears in a depredation way. Like some of that states out west, like you don't legally have to take the meat. That's just old school way that they did things, okay?
Can't understand that.
So yeah, that's an old mentality. What we're doing now and what Daniel Boone did and Jim Doggett did and, you know, is we're utilizing more of a black bear than 99.99% of people use of a whitetail, of an elk, of a quail, of a turkey. I mean, most bears that are killed are the hide is going to be tanned. I mean, most people that kill a bear, I've never killed a bear that I didn't tan the hide. We're rendering the fat and we're using the meat. And I mean, you know, how many deer have you killed in your life? How many tanned hides have you got at your house? You know, not many. So that is a powerful tool to be like, man, we absolutely utilize these animals that were taken. And I think that's really cool. And that's, again, just another mechanism that helps people understand bear hunting. Really? Oh yeah, man. We use everything. So that's good.
You know, and one of the other questions was geared at, you know, how did you learn to bear hunt? You know, did you learn through podcast or social media this day and age, or do you have friends that bear hunt? Did you learn from friends? Did you learn from family members? You know, so it kind of speaks to the whether or not there is a, quote, tradition of bear hunting in the bear state. So it's, you know, it's aimed at determining a lot of things like that, you know, I can sit here and speculate all day long, you know, what the feedback I get as a biologist, but that doesn't necessarily put it on paper, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's very, very good information.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Who's got the best bear story up here from last year? Josh, you didn't hunt. James, you hunted.
Yeah.
You saw a bear, didn't you?
Yeah, I walked one up. I'm not going to say where it was.
Don't tell him that.
But I was hunting on public land and walking along. I was deer hunting, actually, mm-hmm. and I stopped in a spot, set my pack down, hung out for a while, got hungry. Like, I'm going to get my pack and get a snack out. I turned around. I had about set my pack down in a pile of bear scat.
Mm.
Didn't realize it at the time, and it was fresh. So then all of a sudden, I was kind of on a bear hunt and a deer hunt, and yeah. I kept on throughout the day, and I moved a little farther along and got down below this bluff line. It got warm, and I stopped and taking some layers off, and I turn around behind me. There's this bear just staring at me. It's like a couple of rocks like this.
How far?
30 yards.
30 yards.
Probably no more than 30 yards.
Late season, too.
November. Yeah.
Yeah.
So looked at him, and it was legal. I could have shot him. Put the gun up. Look at him, I was muzzleloader hunting,
mm-hmm.
And this was on a permit hunt. That's why I was muzzleloader hunting in November, Myron. Because
James Brandenburg.
Because you know, this was a special permit for that. And looked at him, put my gun down, looked at him with my two eyes. I'm like, well, heck yeah! Put the gun back up, and he was gone, like the black mist over the fence.
Yeah,
he disappeared. Yeah. Disappeared. Mm. I mean, I stood there for 5 minutes with my binoculars, looking all over the hillside, everything. I have no idea where he went, but I climbed up there, and I mean, there's a pile of scat up there as big around as my hat.
Hmm.
Nice big spot, was all worn out where he'd just been hanging out, wow. Just waiting for winter.
Wow.
And I went back in and hunted him a couple more times, but I never got on him.
That's pretty good for two. James killed a bear on public land the year before, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So that's a good encouragement for people. You heard me speak highly of baiting bears, which we can on private land. But we've got a lot of public land in Arkansas. And you can kill them on public land. It's much harder. It's much harder. It takes a lot more work. And it's my favorite hunt on planet Earth, for real. Like, I killed a moose in Alaska last year. Man, I'd throw that moose in the river to kill a big black bear on public land in Arkansas.
You better not tell your boss that. You stole that shot, remember?
Yeah, I did. They didn't show all that. I'll tell the story about that sometime. No, I'm exaggerating a little bit, not much. But hunting bear on public land in Arkansas is, you know, you're going to big to simplify it, and we've talked about it extensively. Actually, the best thing, if you really want to know, I had a couple guys today ask me about public land bear hunting in Arkansas. On the Bear Hunting Magazine podcast, which is still up, there is, we spent episodes talking as much as we knew how to talk about killing bear on public land. That's still on there. Colby, do you remember the names of any of those episodes?
Bear hunting for dummies.
Yeah.
I was the dummy.
Yeah, yeah. And look what it did for you.
I know. I'm still the dummy.
Saw a bear. Yeah. No, there's a lot to be said for that kind of stuff.
Hey, oh. We've got a lot of moms and wives and children in here. Raise your hand if you are here as a supportive person, but you yourself are not a bear hunter. Big, big hand raise. Hey, that's awesome.
That is
awesome. Kudos for you guys. I just want to say, when Clay talked about killing his first bear, he was 21. And we had just found out that I was pregnant with our oldest daughter. She's not here. Two of our boys are here. Bear and Shep are over there. But our girls, we had just found out I was pregnant with Willow. And like a lot of women, we found out that I was anemic. And so one of the things that you got to do is pump up your iron levels. And it turned out that wild meat was a great way to do that. And so that's kind of how I got into eating wild game, because bear meat tasted so much better than deer meat. Those gamey, wild bucks.
And has more protein than deer meat, too.
It does. And so that's how we started eating bear meat. And we were, like, broke. I mean, we were college students and pregnant with our first kid. And he had this 250 pounds of bear meat that he brought in, and I had to learn how to cook it. And, you know, you got to learn how to cook it, because it's not, you know, it's not like grocery the stuff you buy at the grocery store.
It'll kill you.
Oh, yeah. Over the years, as our kids grew up, they all started bear hunting, and I got to sit with Shep on his first bear because, you know, you have to have an adult sit with you. And so I got to sit with Shep on his first bear. It was Shep and me and James Lawrence, who Clay just sang that song about. I called James. He had a walkie-talkie, and I had a walkie-talkie. And Clay and Bear and River, our other daughter, they were out too far to help us. And James and Shep and I went and found that bear. Shep accidentally sprayed the woods with bear spray, so that was fun for James and I, mainly Shep and I. And then last year, I think a lot of you have heard Bear's story about going out and hunting, and as a, you know, just being sent out to public land for 3 days, and we kind of hung around for that. Last year, Clay was, you know, Bear is named Bear. I mean, that's how much this guy loves bears. He named his son Bear. And Bear's kind of grown up hunting, and it's been really cool to watch his migration from just like the guy that took pictures whenever we got the big bear to the guy who's out there taking care of business. And he last year, Clay was out. He was out a lot traveling to different places. And so Bear took on the mantle.
There's
of
Bear right over there. Bear. Wave everybody, Bear.
With that gorgeous mullet.
Look at that mullet.
Kentucky waterfall.
It's pronounced moulet. Okay.
But Bear went out and baited the bear all by himself to get it ready for Clay when he came back home. And him went ahead and started. He took out the mules, and Caleb, who's over there, as I think I saw Caleb come
Caleb
in as well.
Mashburn was involved in that.
Yeah, Caleb was. And those guys would go hook
Colby
up.
Colby helped.
Yeah. Those guys would go hook up the mule trailer, drag the mules 2.5, however many hours away from our house, and hike up into the wherever they were. And it was pretty impressive. I wasn't 100% sure that I was comfortable with Bear, you know, taking a trailer hours at a time. And anyway, Bear got his own big, gigantic bear. How big was your bear this year?
400 pounds.
400 pounds. Bear
oh
John did
gosh.
That. And he, yeah, let's get Bear bringing home the meat for the family. And he had to load that thing up. Him, James Lawrence, Papa, Gary. Gary was there. Brent came in, and they loaded it up. And Bear had to do a whole lot of it by himself and travel through the night. And I was watching him, you know, thank goodness for cell phones, because I was watching him. And it was he got home at 5 in the morning, like having to carry that thing out off the woods. He was way out there, so he didn't have, like, you know, an easy way to get it out of the woods. And so he got home at 5 in the morning, had the mules in the back of the trailer with him and the bear. And it was, as a mom, the support that we provide these guys actually is something that gives back to us. It's been really cool to see bear hunting has kind of been woven in our family. It really was the only way I could eat wild meat, because it was better and it was palatable. We've since learned how to make the other stuff good as well, but it's been something that's been a part of our family culture and a really special tradition, from just putting our little babies, you know, on a bear hide for a picture, to watching them grow up and become hunters themselves. And it's just part of our family culture. So kudos to you guys who are here supporting whoever it is you're supporting that's a hunter. It gives back. It gives back in a lot of different ways, and is part of our culture as Arkansans and as Americans, as Clay says. And it's a part of all of our culture, even those of us who don't actually get out there and do the hunting itself.
Mm-hmm. That was good monologue.
Mm-hmm.
I think mine was better.
I tell you what, it was pretty succinct.
It was certainly shorter.
Yeah, it was a shorter fishing trip.
Yeah.
Brent, you got a bear hunt story for us?
yeah, last year I killed this many bears. So if anybody needs some help or advice on how to kill no bears, come see me. I'll be right over here.
Yeah.
Ready to win Mother's Day and cement your reputation as the best gift giver in the family? Give the moms in your life an Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos. She'll love looking back on these memories and seeing what you're up to today. Even better, with unlimited storage and an easy-to-use app, you can keep updating mom's frame with new photos, so it's the gift that keeps on giving. And this is not a joke. Juju Newcomb has an Aura frame, and we share photos, and they're incredible. Also, my mother-in-law has one. We have them. They truly are really good, really high quality. The Aura frame is easy to set up. It takes just 2 minutes to set up a frame using the Aura app. It also adjusts the display depending on light levels in the room to maintain the true color of your photos. For real, the digital screen is amazing. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame when you use code BEAR, B-E-A-R, BEAR. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code BEAR at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. Montana Knife Company was founded by Josh Smith, one of the world's most experienced master bladesmiths. He's been making knives for 30 years, made in the USA and manufactured locally in Montana. The knives come with a multi-generational warranty and free sharpening. Designed, tested, and built by hunters, MKC is a hunting knife company first and foremost. They have the sharpest knives out of the box and the easiest knives to sharpen. And that is the dadgum truth. You better be careful with them when you get them. They are sharp. MKC is a fast-growing company. They just hired their 55th employee and are looking to hire about 50 more in the next year or so. I've carried a lot of these Montana knives, and the one that I like the most is their Speed Goat, which is a lightweight hunting knife, just the right size. MKC knives sell out within minutes of being released, so head over to MontanaKnifeCompany.com. They have new knives for sale every Thursday at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. So check their website and sign up for their text and email alerts. That is the best way to find out when they have knives available. Use code BEARGREASE10 for 10% off your first order. Montana Knife Company, working knives for working people. The old timers say that the turkeys start gobbling when the leaves are as big as squirrels' ears and the red buds start popping. And we're about there. And we are there in the South. The Onyx Hunt app is one of my most valuable tools in the spring woods. With tools like coniferous versus deciduous tree distribution layer, you can save time by locating edges or transition areas of mixing habitats from home. Find an area like this with water in close proximity, and more than likely, there will be a gobbling turkey nearby. Knowing the exact boundaries of private ground ensures I stay on the right side of the fence, but can easily find public ground to go see if I can't strike a gobbler. If you do get one to sound off, using compass mode and waypoints will help you pinpoint his exact location, allowing you to move in and make the perfect setup to bring him right into your lap. Download the Onyx Hunt app today. You'll be glad you did. Onyx has a special offer for you. Use code BEARGREASE to receive 20% off your membership at onxmaps.com/hunt this spring.
How many were at the Warner Glenn film premiere last night? Did y'all enjoy the film?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. That was fun. I was supposed to tell who paid for all that, who sponsored it and presented it, and I didn't. I didn't. Any guesses who sponsored that event?
Yeah, Onyx. These guys knows. Know it.
That's right. Yeah, for real, man. These guys, they got wind. I didn't ask them. They got wind of that we were thinking about doing a film premiere, and they said, how much money do you need? And I told them, and he said, well, how about we give you more than that? And they allowed us to rent that facility. The guys at Onyx are incredible. And go ahead.
They're also presenting sponsors of this event today as well. Yeah. And as a chapter, we're very thankful for that support as well. So they're helping us out a ton to keep access, to open up access to public land. So, no, seriously, though, Onyx has been very good to us. I know a lot of y'all have been up to do that stuff today, and we appreciate their support.
How many people have Onyx on their phone?
All right.
Everybody
drop
here.
Me a pin where the Bears are.
No, they're incredible.
You also forgot to say who did all the work behind the scenes.
Oh, yeah. Isaac Neal did all the work.
Good
Raise
job,
your hand, Isaac.
Isaac.
See the guy with big earrings? Yeah. Isaac helps me with Bear Grease. He's the
assistant
to the regional producer of Bear Grease, which is me. Myron, let's talk about Bears a little bit more. So we now have a hunt in the Gulf Coastal Plain.
We do.
And how many bears did they kill this year? Yeah, that's a big deal.
That's a big deal.
Yeah, that's a big deal. How many bears were killed down there this year?
They harvested 28 bears. Of course, there was a quota of 25. The season ran from December 10th to December 16th, or when the quota was met, whichever came first. The quota was met Monday evening, roughly 5 or 6 o'clock.
Oh, wow.
It wasn't closed until Monday, 3 days into it, and which it's a little bit of information, but I consider it great information. I consider the fact that the season ran through the weekend, I considered that a great success.
Tell me what you mean by that.
Well,
it was short or it was long?
Well, it was long enough to at least get through the weekend.
Okay.
So what I really didn't want to happen was set the season at such a time frame in the fall that you open the season on Saturday, and by noon Saturday they had already checked enough bears and the season closes, and then you got a lot of spillover and everything else like that. But I also didn't want the season set so late that a lot of bears weren't on the landscape. Remember what I talked about, the denning chronology of males and females? We want to set it late enough to where the females, some of them, or at least in the den, to where they're protected. They're in a den cycle, making the males. We want to bias the harvest toward males.
Right.
So it ended up being 14 and 14, which isn't great. But at least it didn't close in the first half day of the season. Mm. It was long enough. The quota was large enough that, you know, the way I took that is most people were able to hunt through the weekend that wanted to bear hunt. And so, you know, it was a success. I felt like it was a great success on where we placed the quota based on the best research information we had, when we started the season. I think there could be some fine-tuning on the season. But, you know, really just the fact that we had a bear hunt in the Gulf Coastal Plain of Arkansas, and we have a bear season in roughly 4/5 of the state now, which is something that, I mean, I just don't think people would have envisioned that 43 years ago.
Would you have thought it inside of your career? No,
I was really skeptical at one point if it was going to happen. I mean, I knew we had research ongoing, and depending on what that research said, but we kept having, you know, historic flood events, you know, 100-year flood events, two out of 5 years. I mean, you know, so that affected our research. So the research kept getting put off and put off and put off and everything like that. So I was beginning to wonder if it was going to happen in my career. Mm. But it did. And, man, I feel really proud that I got to see it in my career.
Yeah, that's big. The first time that I went on a den study with Myron years ago, probably it was at least 10 years ago, I was I remember – I had never been to a bear den, and we walked way back in to an area, and Myron kind of snuck up to where he believed this bear to be. And first of all, I was shocked that this tiny little hole, I was expecting a bigger hole, you know, for a bear to be able to fit in.
Yeah.
But they're like a squirrel, you know, if you got a hole that big in a tree, a gray squirrel that's about that big can fit in it. Bears are the same way.
Exactly.
And he walks up to this little bitty hole that couldn't have been more than about that big. And you've been to hundreds of dens, so you probably don't remember which one it was. But I could take you to that den today. Like, I remember where it's at.
I'm trying to remember, and I'm just I'm drawing a blank.
I'll tell you later. it was on the side of a ridge, and the hole though was like in the ground, like an armadillo hole. Like it wasn't like a cave. And Myron, he stuck his head down there and crawled in, and it's like his rear end and his legs are the only thing sticking out. And he stays down there for a minute, and he comes back out, and he hands me his flashlight, and he says, "Stick your head in there." And I said, how close is that bear? And he said, "Oh, it's just like right there." And I said, "Like how close?" And he was like, "Oh, like from like me to you." And I said, "Is it awake?" And he said, "Yeah." And
get your head in that hole, you idiot.
This is counterintuitive.
Answer your own questions.
And I said, "Does it have cubs?" And he's like, "Yeah." And no, I remember leaning upside down into this hole and turning on this flashlight. And from like me to Brent, for real, there's Brenda. It was Brenda.
Oh, okay.
Like she was big.
Mm-hmm.
Just sitting, just glowing eyes, just like from me to Brent, just looking. And I'm hanging upside down in this hole, shining. And you hear the cubs chuckling and feeding.
Yep.
And, I'll never forget doing that with you. And then I've been several times since then.
Yeah.
Pretty incredible. What have you learned about bear denning in the Gulf Coastal Plain that's different than in the mountains? Has there been some different stuff?
Well, I've learned that I don't know near as much about bears as I thought I did. I mean, I really have. This has been, man, they're just different down there. It is a different world. Their behavior is so different than mountain bears. You know, I mean, I knew that the denning chronology was later in the year. You know, the cycle starts for pregnant females later, you know. But, man, it's just, I've just learned a lot in the past 6 months about bear behavior, what their preferences are. They're, you know, they're kind of nomadic down in that part of the world, which makes them incredibly hard to trap. Mm. And I did learn one thing, that corn is the acorn of the South.
Is it?
Yes, it most definitely is.
Tell them what you mean by that.
Well, I mean, you know, they're just not interested in anything else you have to offer. Trying to bait. Even in the summer months, you know, when we were trying to bait, I've literally stuffed snare sets full of pastry donuts. I mean, how can a bear pass up a nice Krispy Kreme donut? I was stopping at the mini marts and buying extra glazed honey buns because I'm thinking, this is it. No, they just walk by, turn their nose up at it, and go over and eat, you know, a pile of corn. Mm. You know, so it's just different behavior.
You think they get acclimated to that because of all the deer hunting down there over the years?
Well, I think they've become acclimated to that food choice because that's what has been available to them. You know, maybe not 30 years ago, but certainly in the last 20 years. I mean, if you got bears that are 20 years old, you know, what did their mom teach them when they were cubs?
Right.
You know, where to find the food in the fall. So I learned that, you know, bear populations in the Gulf Coastal Plain aren't homogeneous across the entire Gulf Coastal Plain. They're kind of patchy. You know, there aren't bears everywhere in the Gulf Coastal Plain, even though it's a big zone, 11-county zone, bear zone. But, you know, like southern Bradley County has a lot of bears.
Mm-hmm.
Eastern Union County, western Ashley County has a lot of bears. Dallas County has a lot of bears. Ouachita County doesn't have that many bears, even though it has the Ouachita River running right down the side of it.
Mm.
So, and bears use those river systems and breaks as travel routes. If you look on the display we had out here showing some of the movement patterns of some of those bears, I mean, you can watch them over time. You know, they're running up these SMZs or stream management zones in between these corporate timber products, or running through these river systems and stuff like that, the corridors, the riparian zones. I mean, that's what those bears do, just run around in between that to get from point A to point B. A lot of times it's not necessarily straight across a 10-year-old, you know, production. That's where they den.
Mm.
So, yeah, it seems like every bear in the Gulf Coastal Plain wants to find the perfect geographic center of the thickest thicket you could ever imagine. And that's where they want to have cubs.
Where are they denning? Are they digging holes and root balls?
Well, not really. Most of them are ground nesters in the Gulf Coastal Plain in areas that don't flood. I'm talking about timber production land in Dallas County, Ouachita County, Drew County, Bradley. They'll just den a ground, just make a ground nest.
Can you
but
believe
it will
that?
Be in a thicket.
You could be walking through the woods and see a bear laying on the ground, and he's denning.
Right.
I mean, that's pretty incredible.
I mean, you know, we run across it in the Ozarks and the Ouachitas, ground nesters. Typically, they're going to be in thickets. Ouachita dens are typically dugouts under root balls. Ozark dens are typically crevice-type dens. But the Gulf Coastal Plain, if they're in a flooding regime, they're going to be up in a tree. I believe it was last Wednesday, we were down there and trying to find one particular female named Memphis. And, you know, we found her, and she was in a flooded break not far off the Ouachita River, but it was flooded, and she was 80 feet up a cypress tree. And that's where she's been the last 3 months.
Wow.
You know, and there's a cavity up there. She just happened to be out sunning that day. But there's a cavity up there, and based on the GPS locations we had of her and everything like that, more than likely she has cubs up there.
Huh.
She just happened to be out sunning that day.
Y'all didn't bring the helicopters in to...
No, you know, there was a time back when I was a young man, I used to climb trees and do tree work, but not so much anymore.
You
know, that's
why
we have game cameras for.
Yeah.
you guys may have heard me talk with Myron about this, but so your job title used to be bear coordinator of the state of Arkansas, and then 3 years ago it changed.
It was longer than that. It was about 12 years ago.
Well, no. The title changed. You became bear coordinator that long ago. The name changed, though. That's what I'm talking about.
I became
about.
Bear coordinator about 16 years ago. Name change came about 10 or 12.
Large carnivore?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you're on top maybe of 10. It, Duke.
Maybe 10.
For real? I thought it was soon. I thought
maybe
it was,
10.
Breaking news. Y'all stand by.
No, this was so, but why did they change your name? That's the important thing here. So you were the bear coordinator. You became the large carnivore coordinator.
Right.
Why did they change your name?
Well, you know, mountain lions started showing up that we were documenting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna put mountain lions started showing up that we were documenting. And, you know, in order to, I guess, monitor what's happening with mountain lions statewide and everything, they had to really kind of assign a program coordinator to it.
Right.
Well, the most likely candidate was, well, you know, mountain lions are large carnivores, bears are large omnivores, so hey, you know. And, I mean, honestly, still to this day, 99% of the work I do is bear-related.
Right.
You know, I do some reports on mountain lions, but that's basically just an occurrence type map,
so,
you know, once a year, or put together information for a FOIA or something like that.
But it's pretty cool that there are documented mountain lions.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think there's a mountain lion in Arkansas today?
Probably good possibility of it.
What color is it?
Yeah. Good question. Good. It's
hey,
what we all want to know.
What color is it?
That's going to come up. I knew it.
Can you tell by a mountain lion scream what color it is?
No.
Gary,
depends on what
can.
County it's in.
Where is my dad at?
He's right
Gary
there.
Knows.
How can you tell by their scream whether they're black or just the regular ones? Secret, trade secret. No, I'm real interested in mountain lions. And Myron said that the majority of
Myron said,
I should just follow Myron around and be like Myron said.
The infamous Myron said.
Uh-huh.
No, you said that you get a lot of reports of mountain lions coming in.
We do. We get about 100. I'm going to say 100 to 120 sightings a year.
Okay, and then of those that are a mistake, what are they usually? What are people seeing?
House cats and bobcats.
House cats and bobcats.
Yeah.
It's a big house cat.
How many people here have claimed to have seen a mountain lion on Arkansas?
I'm just saying.
Raise your hand. Jessica Llewellyn? Come on. I know every one of you have told someone you've seen a mountain lion before.
How many grandmas have seen them?
Yeah. No, one of the first podcasts we ever did was called The Myth of the Southern Mountain Lion. And I had Myron on there. And we talked about how everybody in the South, except for these fine people, have seen mountain lions, have 100% seen them.
We do have a lot of people here from not Arkansas. Remember,
right.
All that geographic distribution we talked about.
Yeah,
so we can forgive them.
We'll forgive them.
A little bit.
Now, it's a funny social, it's interesting to look into because mountain lions were here. They were like bears. They were here in great number, documented big time. I mean, the mountain lion had a range from the Atlantic to the Pacific, massive geographic range. They were here. They were in our lore. They were in our writing. They were in our hunting culture. Dads told their sons and daughters about mountain lions, and then they were extirpated. But dads kept telling their kids about mountain lions, and then it's so funny to me. I love it because we don't have that many mountain lions in the state. Maybe one or two at any given time.
Maybe 10 or 12.
Okay.
I mean, it's just we don't. I mean, there's no way to track them. We
right.
just don't know. All I can say is I get about one verification a year.
So he gets 150 people saying, I saw one, mm-hmm. and one of those they're able to verify and say 100%. And it doesn't mean that somebody didn't see one.
That's
they're
right.
just not
Myron,
able to.
Have
right.
you seen a mountain lion in the state?
No.
Have you seen evidence of a mountain lion in the state?
Yes.
There you go.
Yeah. So I got to share one story, mountain lion story. When I was in Oklahoma deer hunting in November. And it was one of these real cool nights, bright moon. It was very still. And me and another guy were walking out of the woods. And you could just hear so good. It was cold and no wind and just bright night. And, man, I hear just a scream. Just like, I don't even want to replicate it. But it was a loud.
Could you please? I think we'd all enjoy it.
Yeah. I can't do it. I heard a loud, it was so loud that I ignored it for three times. And me and this guy are walking together in the dark, and I finally go, are you hearing that? And he's like, yeah, what is that? And I said, I have no idea what that is. But it was loud, so loud, it was just, and I knew, I was like, half of the people I know would right now say, that's a mountain lion screaming. How many of you heard a mountain lion scream? Raise your hand.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Okay.
Big numbers.
Okay. So, anyway, I hear it's like a, and I said, I told Dave, I said, man, I would swear that was a cat. I just would swear it was a cat. We got back to the truck, and I had my coon light with me, and that thing was screaming so consistently. And we were in a big open field that I just said, let's just go over there. And so we turned our light off, and we kind of just started trotting across this field.
Super rational thing to do.
And it quit making the noise. But as soon as we got over there where I said, it had to have been right in here, I turn on my light and just light up the world with this big light, and there's a bobcat in a tree.
Oh, yeah.
Bobcat was making an incredibly loud. And I've heard people call it yowling, YOWL. But it was so loud, you could have heard it from, 300-400 yards. It's just, wow, wow. And I think that's what all you heard when you thought you heard a mountain lion. I think you heard a bobcat.
He said it, not me.
We have a lot of bobcats.
Myron, now you can say Clay
said. Yeah, he said.
Clay said.
I should work for the Game and Fish and field those calls. Ma'am, you didn't see a bobcat, or you didn't see a mountain lion. Nope, your daddy lied to you.
You'd be surprised at how many house cat pictures I get in a year. You know, someone sends a picture to AGFC, ask AGFC.
Yeah.
And you'd be surprised at how many house cats.
Yeah.
And some of them aren't even tawny-colored house cats, you know. They're
just people think they're
all gray with black stripes, or
those puppy ones.
Hey, I wanna end. We've been going for about an hour here. We're gonna wrap things up. Thank you guys so much for coming.
Thank you. And for
wanting to be here. So we're gonna have do a couple more things. We're gonna have the Owl Hooting contest in just a little bit. It's gonna be a lot of fun. And yeah, we're gonna be here the rest of the afternoon. So thanks a lot, guys.
Maui Nui is on a mission to help balance axis deer populations for the good of our environment, communities, and food systems on the island of Maui. They've shared over 126,000 pounds of nutrient-dense protein with the Maui community. Secure your spot now, become a snack subscriber, and join in helping to build more resilient food and ecosystems on Maui. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com, that's MauiNuiVenison.com, and use promo code BEAR for 20% off your first order. This show is sponsored in part by BetterHelp. Around New Year's, we get obsessed with how to change ourselves instead of just expanding on what we've already done right. Maybe you finally organized one part of your space and you want to tackle another. Or maybe you're taking your supplements every morning and now you actually want to eat breakfast. In the last year, I've been more diligent about going to the gym on a regimented schedule, and it's made a lot of difference in my life. Therapy helps you find your strengths so that you can ditch the extreme resolutions and make changes that really stick. Therapy is helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Celebrate the progress you've already made. Visit BetterHelp.com/Greece today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/Greece.